ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीशुक उवाच इति मन्त्रोपनिषदं व्याहरन्तं समाहितं त्रिस्वासुरा यतु धाना जगदूमव्याद्रभंसुता। श्री सुखदेव गोस्वामी कंटिन्यूड। स्वयंभुव मानु वाज दस इन अ ट्रांस चैंटिंग द मंत्रस ऑफ वेदिक इंस्ट्रक्शन नोन एज द उपनिषद्स। Upon seeing him, the Rakshasas and Asuras, being very hungry, wanted to devour him. Therefore, they ran after him with great speed. The Supreme Lord Vishnu, who sits in everyone's heart, appeared as Yajnapati, observed that the Rakshasas and demons were going to devour Swayambhuva Manu. Thus, the Lord, accompanied by his sons named the Yamas, and by all the other demigods, killed the demons and Rakshasas. He then took the post of Indra and began to rule the heavenly kingdom. The various names of the demigods, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Indra, and so on, are not personal names. They are names of different posts. In this regard, we understand that Lord Vishnu sometimes becomes Brahma or Indra when there is no suitable person to occupy these posts. In this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, we are reading of the transcendental glories of the great Manu Swayambhuva. It is said in the Mahabharata, Mahajano yena katha savanta, that one should follow in the footsteps of the great Mahajans in order to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. There are 12 Mahajans. One of them is the great Swayambhuva Manu. Swayambhuva Manu was appointed by the Lord to be one of the great progenitors of mankind, as well as he was the king of all of humanity. In fact, the word man is derived from the word Manu, and Swayambhuva is the first of the Manus. Swayambhuva Manu, in perfect Krishna consciousness, ruled his great kingdom. It is described that although he was quite wealthy and was most comfortable in his livelihood, he utilized all of the facilities that Lord Sri Krishna had given him to cultivate Krishna consciousness for himself, for his family, as well as for every living being within the kingdom. Swayambhuva Manu, it is described that when he would rise in the morning, there would be learned Brahmins and great devotees gathered around his bed to chant the glories of the Lord in order to arouse him from his sleep. And then after taking a cool and refreshing bath, he would go to the temple, he would perform his puja, and he would chant the holy names of Sri Hari. Through the day, he would give in charity to Brahmins. He would offer respect and hear submissively from Vaishnavas. And at the same time, he was like because of this natural devotion to Sri Krishna, he was like the father, the well-wisher of all of his kingdom. And he would perform his administrative duties. And when it was time for taking rest, his servants and other learned Brahmins would gather around and they would chant the holy names of the Lord, chant the glories of the Lord. And in this way, in perfect Krishna consciousness, he would rest at night. And the fruit of such a great Krishna conscious life, of course, are beautiful and wonderful Krishna conscious children. One of his great children was the pure-hearted and chaste wife of Karadama Muni, Devahuti. She had such a pure and genuine devotion to Lord Hari by the good training and protection of her father. In fact, he would only marry her to the greatest of the devotees. Although Kardama Muni had no material assets, he did not have even a house to live in. He was living in the jungles, he was a yogi. And although Swayambhuva Manu was a king who raised Devahuti in such royal opulence, you would naturally think that such a father would want to also marry his daughter to someone who would very much take care of her material comforts in life. But because he was such a genuine king in devotion to Sri Krishna, that his only concern was that her husband would take her back to Godhead. Therefore, he married his daughter, Devahuti, in such a wonderful way. She was so beautiful and she was so chaste that it is described that even the kings of the heavenly planets, the demigods, was anxious to have her as a wife. What to speak of the other kings and princes in the world? Usually we find today that husbands, that fathers, their main concern is the material security of their daughter. How much income does he have? How much does the man's family have land and property? What type of occupation does he have? What type of educational qualifications does he have? How healthy is he? In this way, these are the major considerations. Now, Swayambhuva Manu, you would think that he would be most concerned since he brought his own daughter up in such material facilities that we cannot even imagine. Factually, every king and every prince was standing in line for his daughter, Devahuti. But he married her to the best devotee, Kardama Muni, who was living in the jungles performing tapasya. This was how Krishna conscious he was. And of course, when she was living in the jungles, she had no facilities. She was sleeping on the hard ground. She barely had anything to eat. Her body, which was the most beautiful, godly body, like a goddess, it became emaciated, thin. Her bones started protruding due to neglect. Her skin became very rough and pale. Her hair, which was most beautiful and silken, became all matted and ruffled. No more silken clothes and jewelry, but she was just wearing simplest cloths and bark of trees. Swayambhuva Manu had such a wonderful daughter. She was raised by her father in such a way that she was not concerned with anything except faithfulness to her husband and devotion to Sri Hari. And what was the result of such a devoted daughter and such a highly Krishna conscious father? that the grandson of Swayambhuva Manu was the divine avatar of Lord Kapila Dev. Krishna himself was very happy and pleased to take birth within his family. So the life of Swayambhuva Manu is a most wonderful example for everyone to follow, especially in the Grihastha Ashram. And it is described here in this chapter, the most wonderful news of how Swayambhuva Manu proceeded in his life. It is said that Swayambhuva Manu, the husband of Satarupa, was by nature not at all attached to enjoyment of the senses. Thus he gave up his kingdom of sense enjoyment and entered the forest with his wife to practice austerities. O Skyan of Bharat, after Swayambhuva Manu had thus entered the forest with his wife, he stood on one leg on the bank of the river Sunanda, and in this way, with only one leg touching the earth, he performed great austerities for 100 years. While performing these austerities, he spoke as follows. Swayambhuva Manu could have easily lived his life protected by his children, his dynasty, his servants. He could have very easily continued in his old age in the comforts of his kingdom. But by his own free will, he entered in the forest to perform severe austerities. Just to show as an example to the rest of the kingdom and to the rest of humanity to come, how to end one's life in detachment from anything save and except the thought of God. He is teaching us here that even though he was performing his duty, he was never at all attached to any of his activities within the kingdom. He was only attached to the service of the Lord. And this is a great test. Anyone can say, yes, I am performing my duties in the service of the Lord. Any rich man can say, yes, I am doing this all for Krishna. Nothing for my own sense enjoyment. I am very advanced. But the test is, are you willing to give it up and live in the jungles when the Lord tells you to do so? And are you happy to do that? Huh? Swayambhuva Manu was happy to do that. He considered it a great relief to give up his kingdom and live in the jungle to perform tapasya. And in his tapasya, he was not an impersonalist, simply desiring his own liberation and salvation. It is said you can understand what is within a man's heart by what comes out of his mouth. So Swayambhuva Manu is here chanting. We have just read for the last few days in Bhagavatam class beautiful praises and glorifications of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, explaining with a heart full of love the divine mercy, the divine glories of Sri Krishna. Now, of course, while Swayambhuva Manu was thus in trance, thinking of Lord Sri Krishna, it is explained here in this verse today that the asuras, the rakshasas, wanting to take advantage of the situation, they attacked him to kill him and to eat him because they were very hungry. This is the tendency of the rakshasas. It is said there is always two classes of men. There are the demons and there are the devotees. And in this material world, they are always in great conflict with one another. The demons always want to destroy the devotees. Why? Because to the degree the devotees' compassionate mission in this world is successful, to that degree the demons are in great jeopardy. Because their sense gratification, which is dependent on their ability to exploit the innocent people, cannot take place if people are Krishna conscious. You can only exploit a person who is attached to sense gratification. You cannot exploit a person who is detached. Because how do you exploit someone? You give them the temptations of sense gratification, you bewilder their intelligence, and then you have them under your control. Or you create within their heart a great fear that you're going to take away their sense gratification, and then you have them under the control. So this is the two ways the demons exploit each other. One is by tempting a person with higher forms of sense gratification. That person will do anything to accept it, and therefore you have them under your control. And the other is you frighten a person so bad that you're going to take away his sense gratification that that person will do anything you want. Huh? So within this society, basically we find that the leaders are completely controlling the world on this basis. I'm not talking about political leaders. I'm talking about leaders far above the political leaders. The people who are manipulating the trends of society. They create artificial necessities for sense gratification. They create drugs, they create alcohol, they create televisions and all these other forms of music. And in this way, people just become so intoxicated by sense gratification, they completely become so bewildered of the real purpose and goal of life, that you can just lead them any way you want them. Just like a herd of cattle. Wherever the sense gratification is, they will go. So it's not difficult to control a man attached to his senses. Or if they cannot completely control you in this way, they just come in with threats that they will take everything away, and then you'll do whatever they want. But one who is detached cannot be controlled by anyone. And this is the most frustrating thing for the demons, because they cannot understand it. The demons cannot understand what it means to be detached. It's an impossible conception for them, because they're so attached. And they know that they can control anyone and everyone. But when someone is simply not attached to his senses or his sense gratification, the person becomes fearless. So the demons, they are always looking for the opportunity to exploit the innocent. And in order to exploit the innocent, you have to get rid of the devotees. Because the devotees are educating the innocent how to become detached from sense gratification. And to the degree we allow the devotees to go on with their activities, to that degree, the demons cannot succeed. The greatest sense gratification is the sense gratification of control, power, to be able to manipulate. It's a fantastic sense gratification, especially for big, big people. People who have all the sex that they want and have all the money that they want, they're still not happy. So what do they want? They want power. They want the ability to control. They're not even so attracted to distinction and fame, because it's a higher taste. The highest taste of sense gratification is to control others. Why? Because that is the position of God. He is Sarveshwareshwara. He is Parama, Ishwara Parama. He is the supreme controller. And because we are all trying to exploit the position of God, we all want to be the controllers. And the closer we can become to being the supreme controller, the happier we become. This is the mentality of the demons, the asuras. And you cannot control as long as the devotees are free to preach. They're just wrecking all your plans. They're educating people in detachment. You cannot control such a person who's detached. So they will take every and any opportunity to destroy the devotees. So here we have Swayambhuva Manu. He's in trance. He does not know who's around, He does not know anything except that he's glorifying Lord Shri Krishna in such love that he's oblivious to his external circumstances. So Swayambhuva Manu, due to his devotion to God, he is putting himself in a helpless condition of life. It is a fact. Some people are very afraid of being a devotee for this reason. Because when you become a devotee, you put yourself so much in the hands of God, you're so much immersed, your consciousness and your activities in God's service, that you're very, very, it appears that you're very vulnerable to material failure, to material distress, to material victimization. And therefore people, they do not want to take a humble position. They want to become, they want to remain very proud, very like self-made man, because they're afraid if they become too humble and too devoted, they will be exploited. But Swayambhuva Manu did not care for any of this nonsense philosophy. He simply wanted to chant the names of God and chant the glories of the Lord. And sure enough, the demons came. And it appeared like a very, very hopeless situation. Swayambhuva Manu is alone in the jungles with his wife, and here's a whole band of powerful rakshasas running toward him to kill him and eat him, to rid him once and for all from this earth and have a nice feast. So who is there to protect him? Krishna says in Gita, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. But Krishna is everywhere. He is between every atom. And he is always the protector of his devotees. So, as the demons were thinking, ah, everyone is gone. The coast, it is clear. Let us kill this king once and for all. This devotee. They came, and to their surprise, the Lord of the heart, the Paramatma, manifested as Yajñapati, along with many other devatas, demigods, along with many other great, powerful spiritual personalities. And within minutes, they slaughtered all these demons, and they all lay dead. Huh? A devotee is fearless. Because a devotee knows, if I fix my consciousness on Krishna, Krishna will protect me. There's no other protection. This is a devotee's conviction. There's no other protection. I may have guns, I may be a very good fighter, I may be very strong, but these things, ultimately, they cannot protect you. If Krishna wants to kill you, nothing can protect you. If Krishna wants to protect you, nothing can kill you. So therefore, real strength is surrender to the lotus feet of Guru and Krishna. That is real strength. Material strength is ultimately useless. However good of a fighter, however good of a wielder of weapons, however good our intelligence is to trick others, however powerful our body is, these things are not real strength. These things are strength for the foolish. The real strength for the transcendentalist is his helpless devotion to Krishna. A devotee, because he knows that Krishna is the only real protector, he is the all-powerful. Our power, what is our power? What is our intelligence? So insignificant. It can easily be destroyed within a second by some higher power. Whoever we are. But if we have the strength and protection of Lord Shri Krishna behind us, nothing can harm us. Hiranyakashipu was such a powerful Maharati. With his powerful arms, he conquered all the demigods. Do you know what that means? To conquer Indra? We are like little insects compared to these demigods. But Hiranyakashipu, with his with his massive chest, his strong arms, and his mighty mace, he conquered all the demigods. And Prahlad was just a tiny little child. He was nothing. He was just a little child. He didn't know anything about protecting himself. But he was always thinking of Krishna. He was always chanting the names of Krishna. He had complete faith in Krishna. And therefore, even though Hiranyakashipu was trying to kill him in so many ways, he could not kill him, because Krishna was always there to rescue him. And in the end, Prahlad killed Hiranyakashipu. It was a battle between Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad. But Prahlad wasn't even fighting the battle. He was just chanting Hare Krishna. And in the end, Prahlad killed Hiranyakashipu simply by his chanting Hare Krishna. Because his chanting Hare Krishna brought Lord Nrsingadev, the Supreme Protector, to tear his body of his father to pieces. So real strength is to the degree we are depending on the mercy of God. Real power is in God. And to the degree we have faith, we have devotion. To the degree we have the humble attitude of service toward his devotees, to that degree we are as powerful as God is powerful. Because he is standing right behind us in all circumstances. So Swayambhu Vamanu is just an old man in the forest. But because he was fully immersed in the humble service of the Lord, chanting his glories, the Lord protected him. The Lord protected him from the mighty attack of even these powerful, powerful demons. So this is the conviction of the great souls. Mare Krishna Rake Kik. If Krishna wants to kill me, then I will remember him and go back to Godhead. If Krishna wants to protect me, then I will remember him and continue my service in this world. What do I have to fear? I do not fear life. I do not fear death. I do not fear disease. I do not fear defame. I do not fear poverty. I fear nothing. Why? Because I always have Krishna. No one can take Krishna away. Nothing can take Krishna away. Krishna is my only wealth. Krishna is my only strength. Krishna is my only happiness. This is the conviction of a devotee. And such a devotee, Krishna is always near and dear to that devotee. Krishna is always personally present in the heart and in the life of that devotee to guide him, to protect him, and to love him like a father to his dependent child. And Mahajano Yena Katasa Panta. If we learn to follow in the footsteps of Swayambhu Vamanu and fully take shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Hari, fully depend on his mercy as all in all in life, then we too will never be in danger, even in this world of dangers. And in the end, Krishna will take us back home, back to Godhead. Is there any questions? You have to, in order to not be controlled by the demons, you have to allow yourself to be completely under the control of Krishna and the Guru. You're always under control. The jiva is eternally controlled. The jiva is never the controller. The illusion that we're in control due to the power of Maya. Hiranyakashipu was thinking he was controller of the universe, but actually he was simply being controlled by his lust, by his envy, by his greed, and by his pride. Right? He was simply a servant of his senses. He was Godas. He was utterly being controlled by his wicked mind and wicked senses. He was not the controller. He was totally being exploited by material energy. Huh? And the devotees, they're completely under the control of Krishna. Krishna, how can I serve you? They're simply obediently surrendering to the spiritual master's desire. So the fact is, your constitutional position is you are controlled. There is Godas and Goswami. A Goswami, because he surrenders his independence to the service of his spiritual master, he's, by the mercy of Guru, his senses are under control. He's not the master of his senses. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. It is Krishna that's controlling his senses because he surrendered to Krishna. But the demon, they are Godas because they are surrendering to Krishna's external energy. They are surrendering to their own independent conceptions of what is freedom. And thus they're totally under the control of the forces of birth, old age, disease, and death. Therefore, this is a very excellent question, because in order to not be controlled by the demons, you have to be willing to be fully, totally under control of the devotees. To the degree you've been controlled by Guru and controlled by Krishna, to that degree you're free from the control of the demons. And to the degree you have any independence from the control of Guru and Krishna, to that degree you are controlled by material energy. Exactly in proportion. So the question is, are you going to surrender or sell out your life to trying to be independent of Guru and Krishna? That means you surrender and sell out your life to the forces of evil, to the forces of material nature. And if you want to be free from that, you have to surrender and commit your life under the control of Krishna and Guru and the sadhus. That is your choice. Either surrender to Krishna or surrender to Maya. There's no question of getting out of surrendering. One or the other. If you're not surrendered to Krishna, you're automatically surrendered to Maya. If you're not surrendered to Maya, the only way you can get out from surrendering to Maya is to surrender to Krishna. Prahlad Maharaj, he was just a little boy. How was he free from his father? Because he was completely under the control of Krishna by total surrender. Therefore, Krishna says, Sarva dharman puritya mam ekam sharanam raja aham tvam sarva papi bhya moksha ishyami masaja. Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me. Just surrender to me. I shall relieve you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Huh? No more fear. If you just surrender to Krishna, no more fear. No more fear means no one can control you in this world. It means you are the strongest, you are the mightiest, you are the most powerful of all living beings. Because you are fearless. Because why are you fearless? Because you have that faith that all the power of God is behind you. So let us surrender to Krishna and be happy, yes? We do not hate. We hate only the principle. Of envy. Material life is Krishna's, is being surrounded by Krishna's energy. Everything is Krishna's energy. Therefore, whatever Krishna provides, why not use it for his service? Then we are in Vaikuntha. Material life is when we use the energy of Krishna's for something different. due to our own envious purposes. We want to use it outside of Krishna's desire. We have a nice microphone. This microphone is a very nice instrument that by the grace of Krishna it has been created by the intelligence of man by taking the natural resources that Krishna has provided on this earth. It's a very nice microphone. We will take very nice care of this microphone because it can be used to amplify Krishna's name and Krishna's glories. Huh? So therefore we like everything that Krishna gives. Therefore we want to give it back to him. But if we are envious, then we want to take Krishna's microphone to chant our own glories, to chant our own names. Or we want to use this microphone to sing some song so that I can make much, much money. Or to speak words to give myself great prestige and fame. Whether it is a building, whether it is lighting, whether it is an automobile, whether it is a computer, whether it is a printing press, whatever we have, we simply want to use it to amplify the glories of God. Then material energy, we are not against. We are all for it. It is Krishna's energy. Why should we be against anything that belongs to Krishna? We're not against anything that belongs to Krishna. We are only against stealing what belongs to Krishna and trying to take it for our own purpose. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.